Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Follow me on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can find him at Misto Christo Bo. Chris, you excited to get this third part of our roster breakdown series for the Jaguars rolling with the wide receiver group?
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited for another disappointment of an offensive unit.
But you use that word. Well, I use that word. But last time for the running backs. So we're not allowed to use that one this time.
I can only think of so many synonyms for disappointment.
It's okay. We'll,
I'll pull up like a dictionary or something.
A thesaurus. Yeah. Thesaurus is the right one. I'm not going to say that I was disappointed in the receiver group, because I said before the season that D.D. Westbrook was the team's best receiver when everyone was saying it was Keelan Cole. And Keelan Cole sucked. D.D. Westbrook was great. And I think he's the team's best receiver now, like I did then, and I think he will be for a while. And he took over Marquise Lee's role so well, and that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. He's that style of receiver with elite speed. So I'm excited to talk about him. But the rest of the group was underwhelming. It's my word.
Let's see. Underwhelming. That's a good one. I'm trying to pick which one I want. Calamity's a pretty good one. Blunder. Discouragement. Or Downer. You know, Downer Jags fan. Shout out. I'm going to go with, just for the hell of it, discouragement.
I like it. I can get... What makes you discouraged? I mean, compared to from the start of the season till right now.
Well, first off, I'll start with the Dante Moncrief signing. That was very discouraging. A lot of people hated the deal right off the bat because you're giving him $10 million guaranteed, or just under $10 million guaranteed. And I was like, okay, well. Anyway, but from what we saw in flashes from Dante Moncrief, a lot of his years in the Colts, Andrew Luck wasn't healthy. So, you know, it was kind of like one of those, like, has he really been unleashed? Because he was always the guy behind T.Y. Hilton. So then you sign him to this deal, and you're like, okay, maybe we can finally uncork him. You know, Blake Bortles might actually be an average quarterback. We'll see. And that didn't happen. Granted, Dante got to almost 700 yards this year, but the drops were bad. The not being able to get open, I don't know if his route running was whatever, but actually he'd get open, but Blake just couldn't find him. But so just discouraging, because you thought maybe this guy would do good and then you could bring him back next year. So you might have found a piece of the puzzle. And then don't get me started on Keelan Cole. God, we thought we had like the gem. We thought we had the hidden gem of wide receivers when Keelan Cole busted out at the end of 2017. And what an utter disaster that was. He makes the one-handed catch against New England. Everybody's losing their freaking minds. Like, this guy can't be stopped. And then we didn't realize that he used literally all of his catching ability to make that catch. Because he would post an awful drop percentage. He had 6 drops on the year, which I'm pretty sure was up there in the NFL. Oh, sorry, T.J. Yeldon had 8, but if we're going by wide receivers, he was up there in the NFL for drops. He led to 2 interceptions, I believe. They hit off his hands and were intercepted. He had 2 fumbles. Like, just an awful year for Keelan Cole. And that's probably what was the most discouraging, because I was so excited to see him play this year. He became my favorite UDFA in the 2017 preseason when we saw him developing at training camp. We're like, okay, this guy might be legit. And it took a little bit, but he made the roster. We're excited. Then at the end of the year, he starts getting playing time and playing really good. We're like, yeah, we got a guy. We got another Allen Hurns style thing. Doesn't happen. Then you move on to Rashad Green, who, I mean, probably shouldn't even have made the roster, but I'm not going to talk a whole lot. He drops a first down against the Colts and, you know, loses that game. But DJ Chark, the rookie, you can only set your expectations so high for rookie receivers because unless you're drafting them like top five, they usually don't pan out for a year or two. But, you know, he was the guy. I wasn't expecting that pick. That was kind of a shocker to me during the draft. So we get him. It's like, okay, a new offensive toy. He's basically on special teams the whole year, which he was really good at it, by the way. But same thing as Keelan Cole, drops and fumbles. He had five drops, one hitting off his hands to an interception and a fumble. So him and Keelan Cole had identical seasons in the fact that they were very disappointing. So he was, I mean, it was discouraging to see your young guys kind of falter out like that. And then really the only bright spot for this receiving core is Dede Westbrook. Had over 700 yards, five touchdowns, but he also had drops. He had six drops, two fumbles. I don't know what it was with hands this past year, but they had problems. So discouraging to say the least moving forward with this core because, well, Dante won't be here, but, you know, DJ will be here, Dede Westbrook, which he's the bright spot, and I think they might give Keelan Cole another chance, but it's discouraging to say the least because a lot of these guys that you thought might have been moving forward with, you might not even be moving forward with.
Yeah, I think they need to add someone. We're going to talk about that later. But yeah, I mean, I was really excited for Dede. I was really excited for Keelan as well, as the deep threat guy, but they literally tried to turn everyone into possession receivers, which I get they were trying to, you know, mesh with what they thought was a strength for Blake, but didn't work out too well. Tried putting a bunch of square pegs into round holes, essentially, because Keelan Cole's not a possession guy. I don't think DJ Chark's a possession guy. He can do a couple of them, but really, they're both deep threats. And quite frankly, Dede was coming out of school as well, and he developed well. Like, he's your possession guy now. And that's what made it underwhelming, is that, like, there were very high expectations based off of, like, we actually saw some legitimate stuff coming out of this group, and only one panned out. So while it wasn't a complete utter disappointment, it certainly wasn't anywhere close to what they wanted it to be. We'll talk a little bit more about exactly what happened when we come back from this break. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835. Or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835 and www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through New Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So, Chris, do you think Dede Westbrook can be the team's wide receiver one for a long period of time?
I actually think he can. I think he has shown, because, I mean, we drafted him in the fourth round, but he had those tools in college, you know, was a Heisman finalist, is the explosive guy, and I think when you put the ball in his hands, he was making plays. So I think he has the chance to be, if maybe not the number one, a really, really good number two. Kind of like maybe the Juju Smith-Schuster to an Antonio Brown. Maybe not to that caliber, but also his ceiling is just up there as well, though. So I think he still has some developing to do, which is fine. He's going into, what, his third year? So there is a lot of room for growth there, but I right. think you're really encouraged by what you've seen from him moving forward. And I think Didi is going, I think John DeFilippo and Didi are going to have a field day out there, because I think DeFilippo is going to see Westbrook and can already start thinking of all the ways he can use him. So I think the offense is going to get really fun, and I think Westbrook is probably going to be a core piece of that.
I definitely think so. And as for these other guys, I'm not exactly so sure. I think you nailed it. Keelan Cole, I mean, he's got hands of butter at this point. Chark, I think, progressed decently. I think he's not playing in the role that he should be. I think they need to use him the way they used Keelan in Keelan's rookie season. Keelan, I'd move on from. Moncrief, I wouldn't keep Moncrief here. I wouldn't even bother trying to talk to his agent at this point, because that was such an underwhelming panic move by not being able to keep Allen. What about Marquise Lee, though?
That, me and Phil talked about this during the Senior Bowl. We were actually really disappointed when Marquise Lee got injured, because although we didn't necessarily agree with the contract, we were really excited to see how he could progress moving forward as kind of the guy and see how he'd be in that role. And we're still very optimistic because we think Marquise Lee with John DeFilippo could also be really good as well. So we're hoping his recovery is going well. I haven't really seen a whole lot of updates on that. I know he's walking around, and it's like, because I've seen him at a few charity events. So we know he's walking around, stuff like that. That's great to see. But we were really excited to see kind of the dynamic that, you know, this offense ran on crossers and short stuff like that. And Marquise Lee was really good at that. That's why they signed him, because I think they knew he fit that kind of mold of the offense perfectly. And then obviously in that preseason game, gets hit low. We still don't know the exact injury, but we know it was a really bad knee injury. So I would say I was really disappointed, because although I didn't agree with the contract, I love Marquise as a guy. He seems to always have a smile on his face, always seems to want to put the organization first, loves the fans, and I was really excited to see what he was going to be able to do on the field. And hopefully we will see him this upcoming season with no setbacks.
I think he's going to be Nelson Agholor to this offense if he comes back healthy, which makes sense with DeFilippo. He's a guy that will produce his flashes, has his issues as well, and I wasn't as excited for him to be the guy, just simply put. Like, I don't think what he offers is that special, especially because he's supposed to be this really fast dude, but I'm pretty sure Westbrook has one hundredth of a second on him in the 40-yard dash. I think, what was it, like a 4.4-ish? I think 4.4 flat is what Didi ran, and Marquise ran in the 4.5s. So I don't think he's got the type of speed that you necessarily want out of a guy like him. I think the most important thing that Lee offers is the veteran experience at this point, which I value his over I value Don. I'll tell you that much, with at least his familiarity here. And I think he is a better player than Moncrief. So I am excited to see him come back, but I never really believed in him as the guy. And I think he's totally lost that now with his injury, which it isn't his fault, but I think Didi's taking that on.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I know you weren't as excited to see Marquise Lee, and I wouldn't say I was like, I wasn't like clamoring, you know, shaking, ready to see like how explosive a season he can have. But I was just excited to kind of see him flourish in that role, because I know a lot of people have given him crap, and I know I have in the past. I wouldn't have given him that contract, but you know, I was excited to see what he could bring to the offense, because he was one of the guys that stayed. You lost A-Rob, you lost Hearns, Lee ended up staying, so it was kind of like a homage type thing. But I could see all the points that you're giving up, especially about like the whole speed thing. He was supposedly supposed to be the speedy guy out of college, you know, great kick returner, stuff like that. And whether maybe he's faster off the step and Didi has a better long speed, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see how DeFilippo, because I think that now that Nelson Agholor comp is actually a really good one for this offense for him. So if he's Agholor, who, so just kind of going to Philly, what would you have as everybody's? What if Lee is Agholor, then who is Golden Tate and who is Alshon Jeffrey?
I think Didi's a better version of Golden Tate. And I think Deebo Samuel, in a hypothetical situation where they brought him in, is literally Golden Tate clone, in a sense. does everything Golden Tate does just as well as Golden Tate has in his peaks, which is great. And I think every team needs that. I also think that Didi offers that, though. So, Alshon, I think they don't, I don't think they have Alshon. I mean, Chark isn't like the massive contested catch winner that Alshon has proven that he can be. Whereas I think Chark's good. I think he can win those type of matchups. I don't think he's going to be that dynamic.
It's kind of hard to see the receiving core or receivers with this the Jaguars go, because although we saw it in 2014 or 15, I always forget when Bortles was drafted, those guys were kind of, you know, Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee were brought up fast. I feel like now with the philosophies that Marone has kind of instilled and Joe DeCamillis, it was kind of hard to see wide receiver growth because you're not given any roster spot here. So DJ Chark had to earn himself through special teams to come in. So I feel like it's kind of like an asterisk to seeing what DJ Chark really can bring to the table for this next year. And I mean, we've talked about him on previous pods as how Terry McLaurin can kind of be something like that, but we can save that for the futures thing. But I think DJ Chark, I think you're going to see a big workload increase this next year to really see what he brings to the table. And I mean, he gives you that size outside. He doesn't necessarily use that size to his advantage, I feel like, for like point of attack catches, but it's there. Because you said in training camp, he always had those alligator arms.
Right.
So I would like to see maybe him using that length a little more. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I'm kind of excited to see how DeFilippo can use these guys, because he kind of has a utility belt now of utility wide receivers. So whether they draft another guy to fill in, I don't know where they're going to go, but it's going to kind of be interesting to see how they do it.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about the future of the wide receiver position for the Jaguars after these messages. All right, so I know you have a love interest in Terry McLaurin. Outside of adding him, what would you do for the Jaguars receiver position this upcoming offseason?
Well, our good friend Michael K put out an article today about Eagles free agents and where they could land. And he had two players that he mentioned the Jaguars with, one of which is a fit for wide receiver Golden Tate, and another where he thinks a player actually lands in Jacksonville, and that is wide receiver Jordan Matthews. His reasoning is Matthews worked with new Jaguars offensive coordinator John DeFilippo in Philadelphia in 2016. The play caller could use Matthews as a veteran presence to teach the Jaguars' young receivers how he wants them to execute certain plays. The Jaguars lack a true slot presence, and Matthews could make a dent in that regard. So that's where Mike K thinks Jordan Matthews, his next logical step should be, is Jacksonville. And I could see it. If DeFilippo was going to try bringing guys that he's familiar with, especially in year one of an offense, and that makes a lot of sense. Then he also mentioned Golden Tate coming to the Jaguars as another fit. But Jordan Matthews could be a very interesting name to watch, you know, in that regard, if they were to go the free agent route for a wide receiver.
And the dude, I mean, he's a big-bodied guy, 6'3". He's 26 years old. He ran a 4.46. So, I mean, I see him more as the contested catch dude, but I guess you could play him as like a big slot. Dude only made the veteran minimum last year, I'm pretty sure, $790,000. So he's not going to be expensive, because I don't think he really rejuvenated his career all that well when he was in Philly this past year. He had 20 receptions, 300 yards, and 2 touchdowns. But he does have the veteran experience. He's been around the league a good bit. He's been, I mean, with Philly, with DeFilippo, he was with Buffalo as well for a little bit last year, then brought back to Philadelphia in 2018. I think that'd be a good one. I also don't know if I'm going to be looking to pay many receivers. I think you just try and keep getting younger and building a core. Mm-hmm. Your guy McLaurin makes sense. I think Debo makes sense if you're going to go after, if you are thinking about going after a guy like Golden Tate. But this class is filled with big bodied contested catch guys. JJ Archu, whatever his name is, if you guys don't know who he is, look up Stanford receiver JJ and it'll pop up with the rest of his name and you'll understand why I can't pronounce it.
JJ Arcadia Whiteside or something like that.
I thought it was like Archuga Whiteside or
something like that.
Archetta or I don't know.
But yeah, I think it's JJ Arcega Whiteside.
It's not going to fit on the back of a jersey. But thank God that there's not a second Arcega Whiteside on the team, so he has to put an initial as well. But he's a guy that can win contested catch battles. It's what he's known for, but he's also a pretty good route runner. Brad Kelly broke down his film today on TDN, said that there's a lot more to his game than winning those contested catch battles. But guys like him, guys like N'Keal Harry, there's a lot of big-bodied receivers in this class that can win those type of matchups that the Jags are lacking right now. They've got possession speeds, guys. Hakeem Butler, DeMarcus Lodge. And there's the sweet spot for receivers this year is going to be the second round. There might be some guys that start going first. Metcalf was obviously the best receiver in this class. His neck injury will scare teams off, which if he's still the first receiver taken, I think he's going a lot lower than what he was originally projected to do. And then the run on receivers will start in like the second round. I think I'm going to lead into everything with the draft is assume they're keeping these position these picks until they don't. So assume that they go quarterback, offensive line, first two rounds without trading up, and they've got 2 third round picks. I absolutely try and get a receiver with one of those, unless the right tight end is there. I'm a Jalen Jelks fan. I think that he's the perfect heir to Calais Campbell, which we'll talk about when we start to get onto the defensive side. So if he's there, I'd like that. I don't know if he will be at that point. I think he's going to blow up the combine. But if I'm going all offense, I absolutely prioritize a wide receiver in the third round with one of those two picks.
Yeah, and I've kind of been having this idea in my head that this draft might look a little bit like the 2014 draft. You take a quarterback first round. You get, granted they went double receiver in the second, but let's say a guy that you really like, Chris Lindstrom or somebody like that at right guard is there with your first second round pick. You take him, and then you trade back into the second round if another skill position guy you like is still there. So whether it be like a Hakeem Butler starts to fall or whatever, I'm not really sure what his draft range is. A guy like that starts falling and you want to get him, then you maybe trade. I'm trying to look at what they exactly sent in 2015 or 2014 to move up to get Allen Robinson. But if you can get a similar trade like that and you get like a Hakeem Butler or something like that, then I'm kind of game for that. I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah, I don't think I am either. It just depends on, I mean, obviously like the most important thing is going to be QB. I, like you mentioned, big Chris Lindstrom fan. I humbly accept being the first Lindstrom fan of all Jags fans. Follow me on the road to right guard success. I do think receiver is that big of a need to where package your 2 threes to move up into the second again if you really need to. If you feel like the right guy is starting to fall, like what they wanted to do for Chark last year, they wanted to move up for him. Remember that. And they didn't end up needing to. But you go get your guy. Add as much to this passing game as you can for your new quarterback. Tight end as well, because that position is a void. But their style of tight end is going to be on day three. Unless they really, really like a guy in the round, I don't think they're going anything higher than third and probably into the fourth and fifth. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, those type like this class is littered with receivers in the sweet spot for them to take one. So I think that that's kind of where I'm starting to warm up to, is that a receiver is going to be a pick on day three. Honestly, probably over a tight end, even though arguably tight end is the bigger need than receiver.
So
I think it's just set up that way.
Just going back real quick to that draft trade that they did in 2014. The Jags drafted Allen Robinson at 61 overall. They moved up from 70 to 61 to get him, and they lost pick 150. So what would that be, like fifth round, fourth round?
No. 150? That's fifth, like mid fifth, I think. Because the end of the third is like 99 to 100.
Oh, yeah.
Including comp picks. So yeah, mid to later fifth.
So you don't have a fifth to give up unless you can somehow get another fifth for trading Leonard Fournette or whatever.
Send a future fourth.
Yeah, send a future fourth. So that was to move up 9 spots. So it's probably going to cost you maybe one of your thirds to move back up into the second, which, I mean, if there's a guy they really like, I'm here for that. So if your first 2 days are like Dwayne Haskins, Chris Lindstrom, and then you trade a third or a future fourth or whatever to move back into second and get a guy like Hakeem Butler, I'm ecstatic. I think that's a great haul right there. So that could be an option. I think Dave Caldwell, who his first draft was 2014, might try to do something like that too, where trade some assets to move up and get guys that you know, because, I mean, Dave Caldwell's drafting for his job right now. So a move like that, we could possibly see something if there's a receiver that they really like that's falling, because like you did say, they wanted to trade up for DJ Chark. So if they know that they need more receivers in this room for their rookie quarterback and there's a guy that they absolutely love and he's falling, then they're probably going to pull the trigger to get him. They were lucky that Chark fell, because I believe I heard what they had a first round grade on Chark and he fell. Yeah. So if they have a guy that they covet like that that starts falling, don't be surprised if they trade up for him, especially a big guy like Hakeem Butler, you know, JJ, or all those names that they could get. But they do need a big body guy, so guys like Hakeem Butler make sense, who is like 6'6".
I really wish Colin Johnson declared this year. Big fan here. Receiver out of Texas. He also is 6'6", and he can run, and his catch radius is insane. I think he's the perfect mold of a guy that they needed, but maybe next year if they don't go receiver this year. But I think that should just about do it, talking up the Jaguars receiver group. Next week, we will be discussing the tight ends, the offensive line, and get onto the defense. And yes, we will also be doing special teams at one point, so everyone get ready. Hopefully, they bring back Lambeau, and hopefully it's before we get to that pod. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Jaguars anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can find us, and we will catch up with you guys later.